Hello and welcome back. My name is Avi Heller, and together we are studying the Tractate of Megillah. This series of recordings is a joint project of the Orthodox Union's Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We are at the very, very bottom of Daf He Amud Bet, that's 5B, and we're moving on into 6A right now. Rabbi Yochanan, we're on the very last line, third word in from the right. Rabbi Yochanan said, or Amar Rabbi Yochanan, sorry, Ki havina talya, when I was a young man, amina milta, I said a teaching, I said a statement, disha'ilna lisabaya, that I asked to the elders, to the grandfathers. Now we're at the top of Vav Amud Aleph, v'ishtakach kavati, and it was found out to be like I said. So Rabbi Yochanan, who became a great rabbi and leader of Judaism, remembered this story from his youth when he maybe was one of the first things he ever said in front of the learned rabbis, and he said it was accepted. So obviously it struck a chord and he really remembered it. The only weird thing about it is that, according to our Gemara, what he said is not accepted. I looked in a couple of commentaries. I didn't look widely to see if anybody addresses this issue, but I didn't see anything so far. Because we have been learning about the city of Tiberias, and we were talking about whether or not it's a walled city from the time of Joshua, the son of Nun. We had said that we established that the city Tiberia was known in the time of Joshua as Rakat. And in the book of Yehoshua, it mentions the city of Rakat as being one of the cities that they conquered, and that it was a fortified city. So we said Rakat is Tiberia. Rabbi Yochanan says differently. At the top of Vav Amud Aleph, on the first line, he says Chamat zu Tiberia. There was a city called Chamat, and that is the same as the city of Tiberia. V'lama nikra shema Chamat. Why is it known as Chamat? Al shum chamei Tiberia. Because, as we know, Tiberia had hot springs, has hot springs that are right outside the town. And these hot springs were one of the things that Tiberias was known for. So it was called Chamat, the warm place, because of the hot springs of Tiberia. And Rakat, which we had said was Tiberia, he says that's not Tiberia. Zut Tzipori, that is the town of Tzipori. Now, Tzipori is just a couple of miles west of Tiberias, and both these places exist today. Tiberias is actually a big city on the bank of the Galilee. Tzipori is a village that's a couple of miles, it's like, you know, like a 20-minute drive to the west. V'lama nikra shema Rakat, and why is Tzipori called Rakat? Mishum de medalia kirikta de nahara, because it hangs like the bank of a river. In other words, it's at the edge of a valley, and it's sort of perched up on the top, kind of the way that the bank of the river overhangs the river. So it was known as Rakat, which means a bank. Kinneret, and then the third city name that was mentioned in the book of Yehoshua, and if you want to look this up, we saw it. It was in the book of Yehoshua, chapter 19. Kinneret zu Ginosar. Kinneret is the place called Ginosar. Ginosar today is a resort area on the east coast of the Sea of Galilee, of Yam Kinneret. V'lama nikra shema Kinneret. Why is it known as Kinneret? Temetiki peira. Because its fruit is so sweet. Kikala de kinari. Like the voice of a harp. Because a Kinneret is actually a harp, and it's shaped like a harp. So it's kind of a weird analogy that this fruit is so sweet that it's as sweet as the sound of a harp. I don't really know what the connection is. They're two totally different senses, but that is how it is known. Maybe, you know, it might make more sense that it was on the banks of the Kinneret, but I don't know what it was called back then. In any case, that is the teaching that he said in front of his elders. Now he's going to be challenged by Rava, and it seems like Rava is the one who wins the day. Amar Rava, mi ika, who is there, or what is there to say? Leman de amar Rakat lav Tiberiahi. How are you going to respond to the one who says that Rakat is not Tiberia? Now we said in the previous daf that Rakat is Tiberia, and it was Rabbi Yochanan here who just disagreed. The ha, and I'm going to bring you three proofs from popular usage that it's not true, that actually Tiberia is the city of Rakat. Number one, ki shachiv inish hacha, when a person dies here. Now, Rava is living in Babylonia, in Bavel. So he says, when a person dies in Bavel, if he's a great person, like a very well-known Talmid Chacham, hatam saftile, here they will eulogize him. And they'll say as follows, Hachi gadol hu b'sheshach, he was so great in Sheshach, v'shem lo b'rakat, and he has a name also in Rakat. He wants to say that this means that he has a name also in Tveria. I don't know how it proves that it's Tveria, maybe because Tveria is a much bigger town than Tzipori, but I don't know if it was back then. In any case, there is one weird thing I want to point out about Sheshach. Sheshach is an allusion to Babylonia, and it's an allusion that is done through gematria, so it's kind of a cute thing. Gematria can work in a number of different ways. One of the ways it works is something called Atbash, which is a letter substitution cipher. And instead of writing Bavel, which is Bet, Bet, Lamed, you take the entire alphabet and you lay it out inversely. In other words, instead of an Aleph, you would write a Tuf. Instead of a Bet, you would write a Shin. That's called Atbash. And then you could keep going. Gimel would be Resh, Dalet would be Kuf, etc., etc. But the whole language in that way is inverted. It's flipped. So when you take the word Sheshach, Shin Shin is the last letter, the second letter from the end of the alphabet. So that corresponds to Bet Bet. And Chaf is right in the middle, and it corresponds to Lamed. So Sheshach in the Atbash Gematria means Bavel. And here, instead of saying the word Bavel, they didn't want to say it, I guess, out loud for whatever reason, and they sometimes refer to it in code as Sheshach. Okay, the second one is, the second case that Rava brings is as follows. V'chimaske arona lahatam, if they are going to bury the dead person who died in Bavel, they're going to bring him to the land of Israel to bury them there. Safdi lehachi, then they would eulogize him as follows. Ohaves redeem, he loves the remnants, meaning the remnants of the Jewish people that were left in Israel after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Yoshevei Rakat, and he dwells in, Ohaves redeem, Yoshevei Rakat. They love the ones who are left, those who dwell in Rakat. Se'u v'kiblu harugei omek, go out and receive the dead of the valley. The dead of the valley, again, this is kind of an allusion. The dead of the valley alludes to the river valleys of Iraq in Babylonia. And what they're saying is that the residents of Rakat should go out to receive with honor the coffin of those who come from the valley of Babylonia. Third case, Kinach Nafshe de Rabbi Zera, when Rabbi Zera died in Babylonia, Patach ala Husafdana, the Safdana, who is the eulogizer, he was a professional eulogizer, he began his discourse by saying, Eretz Shinar Hara V'yalada, the land of Shinar conceived and gave birth to this great scholar, Rabbi Zera. Eretz Shinar is mentioned in the Torah as the place where the Tower of Babel was built, which then became known as Bavel. So that's why Babylonia is also known as Eretz Shinar. Eretz Tzvi Gidla Shashueha, and the land of the deer grew him up or enjoyed his creativity. So the land of the deer is the land of Israel. Oy na la amra Rakat ki avda klechem data. Woe is the ones who live in Rakat will say, for this amazing treasure has been lost. So in all those cases, they would eulogize them in Rakat. Apparently, the reason that we know that all three of these cases refer to Tveria is because we know that Rabbi Zera died and was buried in Tveria. So all these cases, Rava says, in which we see the way it talks about Rakat must be referring to Tveria against Rabbi Yochanan, who says that Rakat is Tzipori. So Ella Amar Rava. So Rava is instead going to offer a different interpretation of these words. In the text of our Gemara, it says Rabbah, and it's in parentheses. If you look off to the right side, you'll see that there's an emendation in brackets that changes it to Rava. And that probably makes the most sense. So Rava says, Chamat zuchame grar. Chamat refers to the hot springs of Grar, or this place called Chamegrar that also had hot springs. Rakat zu Tveria. Rakat is Tveria, which is what we had learned in our previous daf. Kineret zu Ginosar. Kineret is Ginosar. V'lama nikra shema Rakat. Now here we're assuming the opposite. we asked the question, why is it called Rakat? There we were assuming that its name was Tveria, but its nickname was Rakat, its name was Tzipori, and its nickname was Rakat, because Rakat means bank, and it looked like the bank of a river. Here we're saying, that is exactly the same. So we're going to say it differently, sorry. V'lama nikra shema Rakat, why is it called Rakat? She'afilu rekanin sheba mele'in mitzvot kerimon, that even the unworthy of Tveria were full of mitzvot like a pomegranate. So it was known as Rakat. The Rak stands for Rekanin Sheba, and the Taf stands for Milein Mitzvot, because it ends with a Taf. So it's kind of like an abbreviation. So Tveria was full of Torah scholars. It was the place where the Sanhedrin was after, where the rabbis were after they had to leave Jerusalem. They made a few different stops, but they wound up in Tveria. So it was a place of tremendous intellectual creativity for a certain period. Rabbi Yirmiyah says differently. This is what I meant before. Rakat Shema, really Rakat is its name, and Tveria is its nickname. V'lama nikra Shema Tveria, why is it called Tveria? She'yoshevet b'tibura shel Eretz Yisrael, because it sits in the navel, that is right in the middle of the land of Israel. Now, if you look at a map of the land of Israel, it doesn't look like it's exactly in the navel. It looks more like it's like the middle of the chest, more towards the top. But that's what it says. It could mean that it meant that it was a spiritual center, the spiritual navel of the land of Israel. Again, at this time when all of the sages were active in Tveria, it really was. Rava Amar, some people change this back to Rabba. That's also in parentheses. Amar Rakat Shema, no, Rakat was its name, but there's a different reason why it has the nickname Tveria. V'lama nikra Shema Tveria, Shetova Re'iyata. It's a abbreviation, Tveria Tov Re'iyata, that it looked very beautiful. And Tveria is a beautiful city in some ways. It's on the banks of the Yam Kineret, and it goes up the hill, and sometimes it was very lush. So maybe it was given a name for its beauty. So that's the end of that little story. As you can see, it seems like the general opinion is that Rakat refers to Tveria, and that therefore it's one of the cities that was walled from the time of Yoshua ben Nun. Since we're talking about city names, we go on to talk about a few others, which will take us most of the rest of this Amud. Amar Zeira. Zeira said, Kitron Zot Tzipori. Now, we had identified earlier Tzipori as Rakat, or as a different city name. Actually, we only mentioned one so far. So Zeir is now going to identify Tzipori with another nickname, and that nickname is Kitron. V'lama nikra shema Tzipori, its actual name was Kitron. Why was it called Tzipori? She'yoshevet b'rosh ahar k'tzipor. And this is the most famous teaching about Tzipori, that we said before that it was perched on a hill, like on the bank of a river. But another way to look at it is that it looks like a bird that is perched on the edge about to take flight. And if you go to visit Tzipori, which I did, our family stayed there last time we were in Israel, that's how they talk about the village there as well, that it is named after the word Tzipor, which means bird. But the Gemara asks, v'kitron Tzipori, he is Kitron really the real name for the city, for the village of Tzipori? Vaha Kitron b'chelko shel Zvulun havai. But Kitron is in the section of Zvulun. It is not in the section of Naphtali. Now they are joining, but it wouldn't make sense for them to, for there to be a confusion between the tribes of Naphtali and Zvulun. Dichtiv, as we see. Now we're going to quote here a pasuk from the first chapter of Shoftim, the book of Judges. It's pasuk Lamed. And the pasuk says, Zvulun lo horishet yoshvei Kitron. Zvulun had a job to do. They were supposed to settle their tribal area. And they, after Yoshua died, they failed to properly settle and take control of the area where Kitron was. V'yet yoshvei Nahalol, and also the residents of this neighboring area, our city called Nahalol. V'yeshev ha-Kanani b'kirbo, and the Canaanites continued to dwell among them. So here we see that it was Zvulun's job to clear out Kitron. I quoted the whole pasuk, not just the section quoted in the Gemara. So that's our question, is that there's a confusion here between the two tribes. So now we're going to go on a little discursus about the area of the tribes. Uzvulun mitraim al midotav hava. We have a tradition that the tribe of Zvulun, when they were conquering the land of Israel, they complained about its attributes. In other words, they weren't happy with the area of Israel that they were given. They were jealous of their neighbor. Shenemar, as it says, now this is in Shoftim chapter Hey, verse 18. So 5:18, chapter Hey, Pasuk Yudchet. And there it says, Zvulun am cheref nafsho lamud. Zvulun was a people who mocked death. V'naftali al merome sadeh. And Naftali was on the high parts of the field. So the question is what this means that they mocked death. Pshat might be that they were so brave and bold in battle that they mocked death. But we understand it, the Gemara is going to understand it here in a much more negative way. Ma tam, what is the reason why they mocked death? Mishum de Naftali al merome sadeh. It's because of the end of the verse, because Naftali was on the high parts of the field. In other words, Naftali was on the plains that were above the section of Zvulun. Amar Zvulun lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Zvulun said before the Holy One, blessed be He, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Le'achayai, to my brothers, that is Naftali, Natata lahem sadot ukramim, you gave them fields and vineyards. Veli, to me, Natata harim ugvaot, you gave me hills and valleys. Now obviously, fields and vineyards with their lush produce are much better than my hills and valleys, which are a mountainous, rugged terrain that doesn't grow so well. La'achayai, to my brothers, natata lahem aratzot, you gave them lands that they could plant and be happy in. Veli natata yamim v'narot, and you gave me inland seas and rivers that I can't plant. Zvulun wasn't happy with his portion. Amar lo, so Hashem answered him. He tried to placate him. He said, "Kulan srichin lecha ayidei chilazon. All of them are going to need you because of the chilazon." Now, the chilazon is interesting and of contemporary relevance. It was lost for many years, but over the last 25 years or so, they believe that they have rediscovered the chilazon. And there's a project called the Petil Techelet, the Thread of Blue, that has been successfully marketing blue thread made by the chilazon. The chilazon is a snail, and it can be found, among other places, off the northern coast of Israel. You can even go dive for it yourself. And when you break the snail's shell, here Rashi calls it its blood, but it's not really, it's some kind of liquid that's inside of it. When the liquid is exposed to sun, it turns into this beautiful blue color, and if you add some chemicals to it, you can turn it into a blue dye, and that blue dye is supposed to be the special blue dye, which is what we call techelet, and you're supposed to put a string of techelet on your tzitzit. So many people now, you'll see them in shuls, have been wearing a string of techelet from the newly discovered chilazon. In the times of the Gemara, in the times of the Tanakh, this chilazon was only found in this area, and its manufacturing as a dye was a specialized process, and only the tribe of Zvulun had had the ability to do it. So they would create the dye, and they were the only ones who could sell it, and so it was sold at a high price, and it was something that supported them. So he's saying, because of the chilazon, you're going to be wealthy, even though you can't plant your crops the way you wanted to. You're going to have this amazing dye industry that everyone's going to need you for. Now there is an issue here. If you look at a lot of the maps of the 12 tribes, it doesn't look like Zvulun is on the coast. It looks like Asher is on the coast. So we'll have to look into that a little bit, whether or not Zvulun really had their area on the coast of the Mediterranean where they could get the snails, and why in many of the maps that I looked at, it has Asher along the coast and Zvulun is inland. In any case, Hashem quotes a pasuk to them, quotes a pasuk from the blessing of Moshe to the tribe of Zvulun, where he says, Shenemar amim har yikra'u, the nations of the mountain will call, usfunei tmunei chol, and buried will be the treasures of the sand. So in the area of Zvulun, there will be treasures buried in the sand. That's what it sounds like. Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef understands this as meaning three different things. Sfunei, buried, zechilazon. This refers to the snail, that's zechilazon. And the truth is, if you want to dig them up, you have to dig down, you have to swim down to the bottom and pick them out of the rocks and the sand. Tmunei, hidden, zutrit. This refers to a little fish that's hidden in there. Rashi identifies it, and it's kind of cute, as a fish that's called tunina. In other words, the tuna fish. Chol and the sand, zuzchuchit levana. This refers to white glass. So another industry they had is they had very, very fine sand, and they could turn it into a beautiful glass, which was also expensive, and they could sell that glass. So their whole industry came out of the sand at the bottom of the water that was adjoining their territory. Amar lefanav, well, Zvulun was not happy, so he said back to him, Ribono shel olam, master of the universe, mi modieni, and should be some added words there, al zot, who is going to tell me about this? Like, how am I going to know that this is my portion? Amar lo, he said, well, Moshe told you in his blessing. He said, Sham yizbechu zivchei tzedek, there they will sacrifice sacrifices of justice. And the way that they want to understand this is, Siman ze yehelecha, this will be a sign for you, Kol hanotel mimcha belo damim, anyone who tries to steal from you without paying for your valuable chila, your blue dye or your tuna fish or your colored glass, eno mo'il bepragmatia shelo klum, will be unsuccessful in his business, meaning he'll fail. Anyone who tries to steal from you will fail. Your prosperity will be assured. And the reason they do this is because there is a halacha that in a sacrifice, if it is a stolen sacrifice, the sacrifice is no good. So the idea that it says zivchei tzedek here means just as a sacrifice, if it's stolen, is no good, so too anybody that tries to steal from you will be unsuccessful. The Marsha here says that what it means is they had a knockoff, you know, just like today you can have a very expensive brand name and a knockoff. There was a knockoff of Tchelet as well. It was called Kala Ilan, and it was a very cheap blue dye, and many people sold Kala Ilan to try to imitate Tchelet, and you could sell it for much cheaper, but you could not fulfill the mitzvah with Kala Ilan. And so he says that what they're saying here is that if they try to sell Kala Ilan, their businesses will fail. Okay, we got just a couple more lines to go regarding place names before we stop for today. V'isel kadatach, and if you would think, Kitron zo tzipori, that Kitron is tzipori, amai mitraim al midotav, then why is Naphtali, why is Zvulun so unhappy? If it's true that Kitron is part of Zvulun, why would he be unhappy with it? V'ha'havya tzipori milta da'adifa tuva. Tzipori is basically awesome. You know, it's an awesome place. Why would they have to complain about it? V'chitema, if you'll tell me, delet ba'zavat chalav udvash, that it's not flowing with milk and honey, we're going to see that it is flowing with milk and honey. I just want to mention here, Rashi paints a beautiful picture here of what it means to flow with milk and honey. Flowing with milk means that the milk is flowing from the udders of the goats. And flowing with honey means that the dates is talking about, so here we're talking about goat milk and date honey. That's what it means. The dates are so luscious that the honey drips off the dates. So between the goat milk and the date honey dripping on the ground, you have like a river of honey and milk that is running on the fields. So if you want to say that Tzipori is not lush enough to be flowing with milk and honey, V'amar Reish Lakish, didn't Reish Lakish say, L'didi, for me, Chazili, Zavat Chalav Udvash Tzipori, I saw the flowing of milk and honey in Tzipori, V'havia, and it was, Shisha Sarmil al Shisha Sarmil, 16 mil by 16 mil, some giant area. V'chitema delo nefishi dideke de'achuha, and if you're going to tell me, well, that's a lot, but it's relatively little compared to his brothers, V'amar Rabba Bar Chana, and didn't Rabba Bar Chana say, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, L'didi li Chazili Zavat Chalav Udvash de'kol Arad Yisrael, I saw the flowing of milk and honey of the whole land of Israel. Vahavya kimi Beikubi, and it was like the distance from this place called Beikubi, ad Akra de Tulbakni, to the port of Tulbakni. I'm not going to get into all of the geography here, but this was Esrin Utartin Parsi. This was 22 Parsi, Urcha Uputya, length and width, Shita Parsi, of 6 Parsi. So if you do the math on here, what you can basically see is that if you compare these two measurements, that the area of Tzipori was quite lush. In fact, much more than 1/12. So relatively compared to his brothers, it was extremely lush. In other words, Zvulun had nothing to complain about. Afilu hachi, nonetheless, and that's the little abbreviation there, Aleph Pehe, Afilu hachi, nonetheless, even so, Sadotu kramim adifale, he would rather have been a farmer. What he really wanted, Zvulun, was fields and vineyards. Daikanami, we can learn this as well, as it says, Naphtali al merome sadeh, that he saw Naphtali on the heights of the field that they were able to be farming, and he was jealous. Shma mina, learn from this. Now, that doesn't really make Zvulun sound so good in the end of the day. It sounds like even though he was blessed with tremendous resources and a fertile land, that he was just jealous of his brother because it wasn't exactly what he wanted. I don't know what to say about it, but that is how it comes out. Have a wonderful day.